right, welcome back, everybody. Here we are once again with a special kind of one-off podcast here as we are in the middle, continue to be in the middle of an extended kind of Survivor off-season. Dom, how are you feeling?
I'm doing good. A pandemic-induced Survivor cancellation will not stop us talking about Survivor. You know, they'll have to do better than that. But we are here with a very special guest. And I don't just say that because, we say that every guest is a special guest. And then eventually you're obliged to say that for all of them, because if you don't, then they understandably become very upset about it. But this actually is a unique angle for looking at the show that we're really excited to get into.
Yes. So let's just dive right in. Let's bring in our guest for today. He is a professor currently teaching a class called Surviving Survivor, Insights from Reality TV for Real Life. Welcome to the podcast, Professor Hartley Jaffeen. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Dom and Colin, for having me. It's really excited to chat with you about the course.
Yeah, excited for sure to be getting into all of this with you as well. I think this is as Dom alluded to, a pretty distinct kind of situation you have found yourself in here, kind of using Survivor as an educational tool. And we have a lot to be getting into for sure on that entire front. But I think it would be pertinent to begin with just your background as a Survivor fan.
So for me, my background as a Survivor fan began in 2000. I remember sitting in my living room watching Sonia get voted out the very first episode of the very first season. And from that moment, I was hooked, became a huge fan of the show, watched every season. And I found little ways to integrate Survivor into my life. While I was an undergraduate student, I ran for my residence a Survivor themed challenge where I got to play Jeff Probst and had the students in two dorm room lounges lock themselves in for the weekend and compete in challenges to vote each other out. And that has been a continuation of my life. I've got a group of friends that I, pre-pandemic would hang out with every week to watch the show when the show is on. And so it's been such a big part of my life. And then it was trying to figure out how could I offer a course at the university that I work at McMaster University on the topic of Survivor.
Hang on, you had friends in real life that you watched this show with. That is fascinating to me as someone who spent so many decades just watching by myself and really only knowing people through the internet that are also fans.
It's been so wonderful. And I think partly that's part of the joy of watching the show is that my good friend Brian and Abby and Jen, we've been watching the show as a crew from the beginning, from season one. And so that has been really valuable to have that group of friends that we can, watch a show together, unpack it, talk about it, and analyze the show. So I've been very lucky that way to have that kind of Survivor fandom surrounding me.
That's incredible. And this dates all the way back 20 years?
Yes.
I do wonder, just because I feel like I'm probably not alone among the kind of Survivor online superfan community in really gravitating towards this because it took so long for me to encounter other people who liked the show as much as I did. But I bet there are more people like you and like your friends than we recognize who are out there and have never really needed to cling to the internet because they've had actual people in real life with whom they could discuss this kind of show along the way. But how did you end up getting approval to teach this kind of class about Survivor, and what about Survivor seems particularly like worth studying for you?
Well, to go back to your last comment, that's exactly how the course sort of got created. I was talking with a colleague, a good friend and colleague of mine, Jen Nash, who is a co-instructor on the course. And she and I were talking and I mentioned Survivor and she paused and said, "Oh, you watch Survivor?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "Oh, me too." And it turns out Jen is a huge super fan. So the two of us originally just started talking about the show, and then Max Dawson plays Survivor. And we learned about him as the Survivor professor, and we started looking into the course that he ran, and we were sort of talking a bit about how could that happen here? Could we bring a Survivor course to our institution? And it started off very generally as a thought experiment. One of the courses, I work in the Bachelor of Health Sciences program and Arts and Sciences programs at Mac. And in the Bachelor of Health Sciences program, we do a first-year course. It's a core course called Inquiry. And part of that course is working with students to think about how the group functions together and how they make decisions as a group. And so we started talking about how a lot of what goes on in Survivor really resembles what we facilitate in the Inquiry course. And over a holiday break, I decided to do a rewatch of season one. And I noticed that when Richard is sitting in the tree, he was using the exact same phrases that we might use in an inquiry class, asking, you know, why are we here? What do we want to accomplish as a group? And I understand why you might be here as an individual student, but why are we here as a group? And we need to know what we're going to be doing as a group to focus on the process. And that really got the ball rolling between Jen and I, where we started talking a bit about, okay, we could talk about group process and decision making. What else could we talk about? And as just kind of a fun thought experiment, we started to design a course outline. What kind of topics could we explore? And when we were finished brainstorming, we had a pretty comprehensive list. And it just so happened that we were talking with our associate dean, Stacey Ritz, about this idea that we had, kind of off the cuff, jokingly. And Stacey said, well, that sounds pretty cool. And it's rooted in academic disciplines, academic theory. We could possibly do this. So this was about 3 years ago when the ball started to roll. And timing just didn't allow for it to get up and running. And then finally this year, Stacey gave us the green light to run it this past fall in 2020.
So one of the things that's always been held up in Survivor's favor about the show, I think, is that it can appeal to so many different groups of people for so many different reasons. And to use the Max Dawson parallel, we spoke to him, God, it's got to be going on 7 or 8 years ago now, about the details of the Survivor course that he taught at Northwestern before he was known as Survivor contestant Max Dawson. And then I believe he's actually come on your course as well for like an interesting little crossover episode.
Definitely.
Yeah. But he, you know, he is in the TV industry and he's an academic studying media, and that's the lens that he brings to it. And that's how he's introducing this to his students. And Survivor is this this platform or this great example for highlighting wider points about the TV and media landscape. And it seems like you're coming at it from almost like a solidly perpendicular angle, where this is you know, the way you set it up sounds like it's quite abstract. It's more about the kind of leadership stuff that you might find on things ranging from, you know, a kind of business course to even just like a leadership retreat or something, all the way through to stuff that you draw down in the classroom.
Exactly. Thinking about Survivor as a launching off point to talk about a variety of different disciplines like business, leadership. We've had a class on race and representation, sex and gender. We talked a lot about lies, ethics and morals, linking into the world of philosophy. So the course allowed for us to use Survivor as a very broad introduction to a lot of different disciplines and a lot of different ideas and concepts.
What are the current college students' experiences or kind of backgrounds with Survivor? I'm guessing some of them have at least heard of it, but I am now doing the math that this is a show that's been on probably longer than several of them have been alive. Do you have, like, the way that Max Dawson had a young Ally Lasher in his class? Are there super fans that enroll in this because they love Survivor? Or are these mostly people taking a college class and finding out about Survivor along the way?
It's a mix. The class had 30 students in the class, and roughly it was split a third, a third, a third. There was a third of the class that were super fans that had seen every episode and new players, new seasons, like the back of their hand. Other students were students that had seen a couple of seasons here or there, had known about the show, had engaged with it, but weren't as invested as other students. And then there was about a third of the class that had never seen Survivor, that had heard of it and thought this is a cool course to take, or really liked The Amazing Race or Big Brother and thought, well, I like those shows, maybe I like this show as well, which actually allowed for a really interesting discussion between the different perspectives, because the students who had never seen the show brought a very different lens to the conversation than the students that knew the show inside and out.
Did the students who were coming to this blind really know what they were getting themselves into, where they look around them and you have these super fans who can, you know, recite every piece of trivia about the show and have this really intense fandom, and they're just there just hoping to kind of wing it and bluff through it?
Well, I mean, for them, it was, I think they were impressed with the the fandom that exists when you have a student who can name, oh yeah, that happened in season 15. Oh, that was back. That is precedent. It happened back in season 6. The students that had never seen the show were really kind of surprised by the level of fandom that exists out there. And for me as a facilitator of the course, it was just making sure that we were all on the same page. So if someone had mentioned something that had happened earlier, I was very keen to kind of make note and say, well, we need to fill in the gaps for someone that might not be as familiar with that moment or that incident or that player.
Mm-hmm. And applying the same kind of question to what you did in setting up the course, for both you and Max, your fandom goes deep, all the way back to the early 2000s. But I imagine there are some people, whether it's in TV and media or in the kind of area that you work in, where they may not have that kind of emotional, sentimental attachment to the show. And for them, it's just one more example where, okay, if it comes up in class, this is a good way to illustrate a topic, but they're not going home and devouring all, old seasons in their spare time.
Yes. And that was what was really neat about the course, too. The number of students that would, I'd assign an episode from a season, and they would watch the entire season, which was so wonderful to see, because that, to me, says that there is this concept that if you give a little bit, once they get a taste, then they're going to run with it. Because the way the course was structured was we watched season 37, one episode a week, David versus Goliath, as a through line to connect the entire course. And then every week we would watch episodes, single episodes from other seasons that were content specific based on the topic of that week.
Oh, that's interesting, because I did know, along with Max, you had also had Christian and Gabby from David versus Goliath, I believe, joined your class at a certain point. And I was thinking to myself, the kids who didn't really know the show must have just been like, who is this guy who just loves robotics? And like just had no idea why everyone else was so into him. But it's that's really interesting. I was going to actually just ask you next about the way it's structured. Do you pick a different season each time, or a different kind of topic of the week, or how do you choose which episodes you're rewatching?
The way it was structured was that the episodes that we watched for that week were very much linked to the topic of that week. So, for example, in thinking about race and representation, we watched season 39, the conversations, the episode with Jack and Jamal, as well as pairing that against Yasmin and Ben in season 19, and looking at how race and representation has been dealt with on the show, and looking at season 37 as a whole, or where we were at that point, to look at how is race and representation been looked at through the lens of the season that we were currently watching as well. So the episodes that we watched in addition to the season 37 episodes were very much looped and linked to the topics and or linked to the guest speakers we were going to be having. So knowing that Max was going to be joining our class, I made sure to include a couple of episodes from season 30 that addressed some of the topics earlier in the semester, so that way they had a context of who he was before he joined our class.
Okay, and I'm already struggling to come up with how I want to frame this question, because I certainly do fully believe that Survivor can go a long way in demonstrating a lot of larger concepts about society in general. But I also think, and particularly as far as race relations are concerned, Survivor is not, from the outset, even accurate, maybe the wrong word. This is not an indicative kind of sample size of the greater public at large. Is there any kind of like disclaimers that you put out there to the students in terms of just like bearing in mind this is reality TV, and this is not necessarily a cast of people that are representative of the larger population, and there are definitely contextual factors like the strategy and elimination elements that are playing a role into this as well. I am framing all of this horribly, but I'm just curious about the differences between the conclusions you can draw from things happening within a game of Survivor versus extrapolating that onto the real world.
Absolutely. We were very mindful of that, looking at how the show can mirror what goes on in real life, as well as being sensitive to the fact that this is a television show and it doesn't always necessarily act as a microcosm of what goes on in real life. So, for example, when we're talking about group process and decision making and talking about how groups make decisions, certainly the way groups make decisions in the real world operate slightly differently because no one's trying to vote you out versus in the show. Though we then were able to use that as an opportunity to talk about, well, on the one hand, the way groups make decisions in real life does not operate similarly to the way they operate on Survivor because no one's trying to vote you out. And still, though, the way groups make decisions in real life, everybody is fighting for something. And maybe they're not voting you out, but they want to get that promotion over you. And so thinking about how some of those concepts do blend and play into what happens in real life. And then to speak to the representation piece, like in terms of race or sex and gender, certainly there were moments on the show that were occurring because it is a game show and those moments may not occur in real life. Though we were able to use the show as a way to unpack some of the conversations, some of the problems in thinking about how players who identify as Black, Indigenous, people of color, they're a lot of the time voted out early on in the game. And thinking about, well, why is that happening in the game show? And how is that a representation of what happens in real life in terms of privilege, in terms of oppression, in terms of systemic challenges and barriers that folks might face?
That kind of ties into what my next question was going to be, which is, how often does the game itself, not just the show, but the game of Survivor, act as a good conduit for highlighting those issues versus maybe getting in the way, where you're trying to highlight a general principle about how humans operate under various circumstances, but the next 2 or 3 minutes of the episode have been taken up with someone just monotonously reciting the plan for the split vote for that tribal council, and that all of that is kind of a distraction?
It depends on what area we focused on for the class. The way each class was structured was the students were put into small groups or alliances, and the alliance were responsible for engaging the class with a challenge. And the challenge was essentially 2 or 3 core discussion questions based on the topic and the episodes for that week. And so sometimes the strategy that was being discussed in the show didn't necessarily surface in the initial conversation because the alliance of presenters were more focusing on the topics for that week. And then typically in the second half of the class, we were able to unpack, you know, the strategy and talk deeply about what we saw in the game show itself, and then link that back to other conversations that we shared earlier in the course. And in thinking about other aspects of the game, there were moments where we were able to look at gameplay and say, Christian did this, Gabby did this. If Gabby wasn't a woman and that was a male body doing this, how would we perceive it? How would we engage with it? How would we analyze it? And that allowed for us to talk and think about how are players perceived in the game, and then thinking again about how that translates to how sex and gender are perceived in our daily lives.
Has it come up much? I guess for some of the more hardcore fans among the group, they will have had exposure to some of these people through other media, whether it's, you know, Twitter, podcasts, or other media appearances. But for the people there who are just encountering these people as characters on the show, have there ever been times where it feels like there's kind of this big mismatch between how they came across on the show, either in general or to those people, and then when you get them on you know, on a call for the class, it feels like the perception is totally different?
So the guests that we had join our class, there wasn't that kind of dissonance between who they saw on the screen and who that person was when they came into the class. Though certainly those conversations did come up, you know, watching certain episodes and seeing certain players perform in a particular way, there were some students that were referencing conversations that they had online and how their Twitter persona or their real life personas were either aligned or misaligned with what we saw represented on the screen. And we were very mindful, for example, of the class talked about in season 37, you know, Natalie, and the way Natalie was edited as this player who could not get along with the tribe, who was very argumentative, who didn't seem to receive feedback well, and the class was really good at saying, you know, this is an edited version of who she is. Perhaps if we got to know her outside of the game or outside of this space, she might perform and act very differently than what we saw, you know, on the screen.
Yeah, I suppose that contrast is more inevitable in some cases than others. So I saw that Lex had joined to talk about his time on the show. And Lex's last appearance on the show was back in 2003, 2004, I want to say, in a season that had very dark overtones where he was at the center of this big controversy. And so watching that, if that's your first impression of Lex, I imagine the guy that you meet here in, you know, 2018 or whatever must seem quite different.
Absolutely. And part of that was what they had seen, too, because the super fans had that knowledge of who Lex was from watching season 3 and watching season 8. The people who had either not seen those seasons or who had never been exposed to the show, their introduction to Lex was just watching season 3, a little bit of season 3, and a little bit of season 8 pre-merge. So they didn't get to see the ugliness that transpired between Lex and Boston Rob. And so for that cohort of the class, they weren't able to pick up on that. And for the fans of the show who had known Lex back then, they were able to engage with him and ask those questions. And Lex was very generous about speaking very candidly about what happened. And because he and Boston Rob have healed, he was able to say, all water under the bridge and it's all good now. What would have been really interesting, or what would have allowed for possible kind of deep conversation, is anything that might have happened, you know, from the most recent season of season 40, where possibly the wounds are fresh or the conversations are still being hashed out even today.
I think even if you just had Lex on as recently as like 2015, I think he still was pretty upset with Boston Rob, and it's a relatively, I may be wrong about that, but I think it was a relatively recent kind of burial of that hatchet. But that, I think, is one of the most kind of interesting and potentially educational aspects of Survivor, is the fact that this has been going on for 20 years. And I do think there is a pretty big difference between having 40 seasons from which to draw if they had all just been filmed relatively quickly back to back to back to back times 40 or whatever, versus spanning two decades. Have you found the older seasons in particular being useful in any areas? Because I would imagine that a lot of these conversations looked a lot different back in the early 2000s.
Absolutely. And I'll speak to two specific examples that we covered in the course. One was just language. Looking at season 1, episode 1, the language that Rudy and Dr. Sean were able to say about Rich to Rich would never air today, or would be taken up very differently today if they were to use some of the language that they used to define Rich. And so that was obviously not necessarily acceptable in 2000, but it was more culturally acceptable, where no one was going to respond negatively, or I'm sure there were people who did, but it wasn't the same cultural context. And that was one incident that we were able to look at language and how language has evolved from season 1 to season 40. And then the other incidents that we looked at was looking at Gandhi and Ted from season 5, and Sue and Rich from season 8, and looking at the incidents around harassment and sexual assault, and then comparing that to season 39, and looking again at how the show frames those conversations, how the show engages in those conversations, and again, placing them in cultural context of, you know, season 39 coming out of the other side of the Me Too movement and how the show responded to it, and probably how the show, or definitely how the show should have responded to it back in season 5.
Have you noticed any kind of changes in Jeff Probst in particular over the years?
Ooh, that's a great question. Well, one thing that I think is really funny is just how he has shifted as a host, thinking about season 1, where he doesn't want to make a call. You know, I want you to make sure that you have your boat next to the next to the buoy because I don't want to have to make the call of it was there or it wasn't. And now, as the host, he is very much making those calls and engaged and actively playing that role of referee. And also the questions that he asks certainly has evolved over the years, which makes sense because in the early days, he was getting a feel as to what kind of host he was going to be and probably testing out what the boundaries were as a host. What questions can I ask? How do I phrase it? And what tone do I use when asking these questions? And then later on, as you get through to the 20s and 30s, he's much more pointed in his questions and won't let players get away with roundabout answers or answers that don't answer the question. He's much more directive of, okay, you said that, but you didn't answer the question, so I'm going to ask it again. Where in season one or season two or season three, he would ask a question and then shift to the next player.
Do you see Jeff's role in any way analogous to your own, where there are various forms of international Survivor where it feels like the host, by and large, I think it's agreed, does a good job, but the host themselves mostly kind of recedes into the background and they're there just to facilitate what's playing out in front of you instead of being what seemed like at times an active participant, the way that Jeff can come across. And so for you, when you're thinking about how you want to conduct and guide this discussion, do you see yourself as someone who is just there to kind of present the material and let it flow organically, or are you playing a more active role in guiding where that goes?
I would say a bit of both. My role, the way I teach this class or any class that I teach, is that my role is that of a facilitator, exactly the way you described, where my responsibility in the class is to ask questions and to challenge ideas and to engage in respectful dialogue. And so when we were having some of these conversations, I wanted to open up the conversation so we could look at the different topics that we engage with in the course from a variety of different lenses, not just one specific perspective or the perspective that I think is the most interesting or that I think could be the most valuable. So on the one hand, there were certainly moments where I just asked questions and let the class engage and share their thoughts and their interpretations and their perspectives on it. And I remained very neutral. And then there were other moments where I really wanted to draw attention to something. And so I would ask a question the way Jeff might, in a way that really focuses the conversation to deeply engage with a particular moment or a particular topic so that the class can think and reflect on that particular incident.
Has any of the international Survivor stuff ever come up, or is that not necessarily beyond the scope of the class, but Survivor already is so broad and so deep that trying to encompass that as well would just be too much to handle within the scope of one syllabus?
So exactly. Certainly within the scope of the course, one of the things that I thought was really interesting that I hadn't anticipated as a super fan was that we were watching, like I said, season 37 throughout, and then every week we were watching episodes from different seasons. And for me, because I know the show so well, I was ready to go. And week three, week four, week five into the class, students gave me some feedback that said, basically, there are a lot of, we're learning new casts every week. Yeah. And we're learning new players every week, and it's hard to keep track. And that, for me, was a moment where I reflected and went, wow, yes, that is, I can see why, if you are new to the show or have never engaged with the show, you're learning 16 to 18, possibly 36, if we're watching two different seasons for a week, every week. And so after our fall reading week in October, the back end of the class of the course, I changed a little bit around so that we were only watching season 37, as well as primarily seasons 19 and 28, as a way to kind of keep the cast consistent so that way students didn't have to learn new cast members week after week.
What was their reaction to Russell?
Oh, they split. Very much like the fandom. There was the school of thought that they loved him and he was a very brilliant, insightful player. Maybe didn't like his morals necessarily, but thought he played the game really well. And then there were the students in the class that just found him, you know, reprehensible and despicable. And that was he is a great character for that, because part of the class spoke about the actions that you play in the game are the actions kept within the framework of the game. It's just a game, and anything I do in the game is not necessarily indicative of who I am outside of the game, or does the show represent who you are and how you live your life? So he was actually an excellent conversation starter for conversations around gameplay and morals and ethics.
Was there
I was going to say, where did that conversation end up going? And did you notice, for example, the invested Survivor fans who have been watching the show for a long time, did they come down one way versus the people who were new to it? Or was it mostly the same distribution across all of those groups?
What's interesting is the number of students that were diehard fans that through engaging with the course had some discovery and aha moments. And I had them too as I was facilitating the class, where they were able to look at the show from a new perspective, where they might have entered the class going, yeah, the game's the game. Everything Russell did, Johnny Fairplay lying about his dead grandma, that's all clean. That's all fine. And then through engaging with the class and engaging in conversations around philosophy, around morals and ethics, they started to second guess and to reconsider and think about, oh, wait a minute, I used to think this player was an excellent player, or I used to think this player was not a very good player. And now watching the show again through the lens of some of these conversations, I'm realizing that they actually could have been a good player, but circumstances around any number of different pieces got them to be voted out. Or a player that they perceived to be really strong and really good, they might have critically analyzed it as not necessarily as strong as they previously had thought, even though they saw themselves as a super fan. And similarly, students that had never engaged with the show, some really connected with the Russell-type gameplay and some didn't. So I think it was very much individual-dependent, not necessarily based on your level of fandom, but just your own personal interpretation.
Was there the same degree of uneasiness around Tony from people who had not seen him before?
Interestingly, no. Tony wasn't perceived as negatively. And I think that's partly because, truthfully, it's his personality. My background is in theater. And for me, one of the conversations that we had in the class was around the performance and how characters, players perform. And Tony is able to perform in a very different way than Russell did. And so even though they might be committing the same acts or performing in the acts themselves could be similar, the way Tony embodies them and performs them is slightly different from the way Russell did. And I suspect that's why a lot of students perceived Tony's actions slightly differently than Russell's, because of how he embodied it.
With that theater background, for you, are there, I guess, either sharper or blunter distinctions between what you might call the inescapable fact that you are on a TV show, there are cameras around, you will be conscious of the cameras to some degree, but mostly being authentically yourself with that in mind, versus consciously playing into the cameras, trying to give these snappy confessionals and so on, versus the extreme of that, which you only see in a few rare cases, I think, but maybe Johnny Fairplay style of consciously trying to construct a character that you are now performing as that character on TV versus being yourself?
We certainly had those conversations. And this loops back to the conversation we shared earlier about how the show evolved, because back in the early seasons, players didn't know that there was going to be the possibility of being brought back for returning seasons. And you know, season one didn't really know what the show was going to be. And so it's been really interesting to look at how players perform in the early seasons and how players perform in the later seasons, knowing that if I am a big character or if I am an interesting personality, I might be brought back for a future season, or I might be able to use that to spin off into any number of different possibilities. And so I think that players, there are certainly some players that are hyper-conscious of the characters that they are playing. And then there are some players that are hyper-conscious of that character for the first few days. And then because of the elements of the game, because of the fact that they're being filmed 24 hours a day, that performance starts to disappear and they become their authentic selves. And from talking to the players that joined us in the course, the sense that I get and that the class got was that it's really hard to perform that long, that the show really does create you to be your authentic self. And the elements, the lack of sleep, the lack of food, make it extremely unrealistic and in some cases impossible to play anything but authentically you.
One kind of larger question about just reality TV and philosophy in general, in terms of kind of a moral imperative to present situations not entirely unfairly, where I guess what I'm getting at is, do you feel like Survivor, given that it is presenting itself as kind of an exploration into all of these different kind of societal issues, simultaneously then is obligated to tell those stories in, obviously they're not going to make it in boring ways. They have plenty of incentive to make good TV, and that is the primary focus, of course, but is it necessarily wrong in their position, I guess, if they wanted to go a hard different direction and just totally exploit anyone stupid enough to sign up and make the most provocative story they could? Is that necessarily wrong of them, given that they are explicitly reality TV producers, or do they owe it to the format to try to present this relatively fairly?
It's a great question, and one that we didn't explore explicitly in the class, but certainly came up in the course in little ways. And I'm torn on this question, because a part of me, as you're describing, this is a reality television show. And the goal of the producers is to create compelling entertainment for a viewing audience. And on the other hand, I do think that the producers have a responsibility. And I suspect that if you ask that question to the producers, they would probably say, yes, we have an obligation to create compelling entertainment, and we are going to cast people and put them in situations that create moments that are provocative or are ridiculous or are explosive, with the asterisk that the players themselves are relatively safe, that there's no kind of racism, sexism, harassment, those types of things. And for me, I have trouble, I don't think, and this is why I'm not a producer of reality TV, because I don't think I could sign on for that. Because I do think that the show could create compelling television that also is morally responsible in having important conversations and using reality TV as a vehicle to engage the public with conversations that should be had and allow the audience to reflect deeply on their actions, behaviors, and the way they're consuming their entertainment. Now, I know I might be in the minority, though that's just sort of the way I kind of see it and would want to frame it.
I think they, in recent years at the very least, have really tried at the very least to step up in that capacity, but I suspect there was a stretch there where they were really just trying to get the powder kegs to eventually explode over the course of some of those seasons. But yeah, I am with you, where I fully acknowledge that they are reality TV producers, and they would be doing a bad job of their job title if they were not primarily focused on how do we get more people to tune into this so advertisers give us more money. That is the entire point of television. But at the same time, I do think there is at least some sort of responsibility on their end. And I'm thankful that while there have probably been instances and plenty of them along the way where that was not kept in the same amount of focus that it potentially should have been, I do think they have made a lot of strides in recent years, even though they may be still in the early days of figuring out how to really be addressing this going forward. But it does seem at least promising to me as things stand right now.
Yeah, and even looking at the way the cast is created, thinking about the early seasons, and Lex spoke about this, looking at casting Frank and Brandon in season 3 and putting them on a tribe together. Or Lex talked about how he predicts that he and Tom were cast to be antagonists because the producers might have assumed that Tom would take one look at Lex and go, don't want to go near that guy. And then even kind of fast forwarding to season 37, you know, Lyrsa talks about this, that, you know, with her relationship and bond with Elizabeth was something that the producers might not have necessarily anticipated. And that could be Lyrsa stereotyping who Elizabeth might be, looking at a woman from the South and assuming that they wouldn't get along. But I suspect that the casting process does put players together to create an outcome that makes engaging television.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a formula they've been aiming for, and they're certainly not alone. I think that's the tried and true reality TV formula since the very early days. I would definitely like to know, in terms of things they're doing right, and people along the way who are doing a good job, when you're talking about things like community building and leadership, who are the people in seasons that you end up highlighting in terms of this is what works on Survivor and is effective in real life as well?
Some people that jump to mind, some players that jump to mind, season 37, Christian did an amazing job of building community and being a player for all. In the way he engages with players, he very much adopted and adopts a improviser mindset, the yes and mindset, where he was able to authentically engage with other players in his season. And I say authentically intentionally because a lot of the time when people hear this conversation of, oh, he was able to talk to different people, you think, oh, he's a chameleon, he's this phony guy. And for me, there is authentic performance and there's inauthentic performance. And the way I make that distinction between the two is inauthentic performance is when you're changing your values and what you believe based on who you're around. That is clearly inauthentic as a performative element. But I talk very differently to my students than the way I would to my dad, than the way I do to my friends, than the way I'm talking to you to right now. And that performance isn't false or fake. It's just I'm playing a different role.
Are we more on the your dad or your friends side?
definitely friends.
Or students, you know, we'll take that too.
And exactly, and so that kind of performance while I'm chatting with you, it's not a performance in the sense that you're watching a play, but it's a performance in the sense that I'm playing a role right now, authentically based on the conversation and the two other performers that I'm engaged with. And so Christian did a really wonderful job of being able to perform with Gabby and align himself very closely with her, engage authentically with Dan and John, as well as engage with Nick and Davey. He was able just to find ways to engage them and meet them where they are. And that can be really, really valuable. In the theater world, one of the biggest and most important rules is when you go on to take a character, it's understanding what is this character fighting for? What does this character want? And by understanding what a character is fighting for, what a character wants in a scene, will help you portray that emotion in a performance. And the way that aligns to Survivor is players that are able to identify what is that player fighting for? What do they want? That gives you insight into thinking about if they want this, how are they going to get there? And now I'm going to be kind of two steps ahead. And I know Boston Rob talks a lot about that in his gameplay in terms of thinking about and figuring out what are their best moves. And by understanding their best moves, now I can now kind of intercept or counter those moves.
Were there any particular skills or personality traits that you were looking for in your guests? You know, if you had your druthers, you got to invite whoever you want and you knew they would accept. Are there certain things that make someone a good guest for your class? And how much does that overlap with the skills that you need to succeed at Survivor? Because you can imagine there being people who are very good at Survivor, but mostly not in a self-reflective way, where they have a certain charm or they're easy to be around or they have skills that are relevant in these very artificial circumstances, but maybe not so much in real life. And then I guess on the other extreme, you can imagine people who maybe were not cut out for Survivor, but who could reflect on why that was in a way that would be informative and useful to your audience.
For me, the way the guests were invited were based on for a variety of different reasons. Part of it was based on the fact that we were watching season 37 and wanting to get Gabby and Christian because I knew the class was going to love them. And from watching them on the show, they were two players that were able to reflect deeply about their experiences. Lex was someone who was an older school player, so getting that perspective I thought was going to be really valuable. And then, you know, Max Dawson as the original Survivor professor made sense to kind of keep that through line between what he created at Northwestern and what we were creating at McMaster. And then other players like Missy and Jamal from season 39 were coming on to talk about topic-specific and content-specific conversations. To answer your question about the ideal guest, I think what makes that a guest really ideal is a couple of different skills that make you an ideal guest and probably make you an ideal Survivor player, in that you're able to actively listen and engage deeply with whoever is asking that question. And then, to use your words, deeply reflect on their actions, deeply reflect on their behaviors, and then being vulnerable enough to share that and engage with the class or the group, the audience, in a very meaningful way. And we were very lucky with the guests that we had on that were all able to do that. And certainly there are Survivor players that I would love to join the class in the future who have those traits, who are able to really critically reflect on what they did and share their learnings to the class. Though there certainly can be value in having the other perspective of having a player guest a space without that insight. Because I think post guest speaker, the class would have a lot of conversation and a lot of analysis about that player.
Yeah, I did wonder if certain people's fandom might get in the way of there being students in the class, in a sense where I think maybe it's harder to take in the full value of what someone like Christian or Gabby is saying if you are starstruck on some level to see Christian and Gabby, or if you know, you're excited to pepper them with questions about the minutiae of their season versus, well, that's not really the point. This is about more kind of a big picture lessons here.
Absolutely. And part of it was how critical were the questions going to be? The students were they were excellent hosts and excellent guests to the guests that we had join us. And I wonder, you know, is that because there was no opportunity to ask the questions, or maybe the players addressed the issue or the conversations that wanted to be had? Though the idea that we are engaging with players that we've just spent a semester watching or we've seen on television, that starstruckness certainly could have impacted the questions that are being asked, because one might be thinking, can I ask them that? Can I be so bold to ask them about that? Or is this something that might be inappropriate or very inappropriate? So that certainly, I'm sure, was at play.
I'm keen to hear what words of wisdom or lessons, if any, that Max Dawson had for you as one of the handful of people who has even done anything in a similar space. And as we flagged up at the start, you come to it from different backgrounds. So even within that, there's not too much overlap. And then as someone who both was very conscious of the character that he was performing on the show and who has obviously thought a lot and had a lot to say about his own Survivor experience and the show in general, were there lessons for your discipline, I suppose, that you took away from the precedent that he set?
The biggest lesson that I received from Max when I was thinking about this course, even before it came to fruition, was this idea around Survivor as a text that could be used to talk about a variety of different things. And when I had the opportunity to connect with him before the course even was created, and I mentioned to him that, oh, I'm thinking about this and we're trying to get it off the ground. And he was super supportive and a champion of it and said, yes, do it. That sounds wonderful. And was really encouraging me and Jen, my colleague, to really think deeply about the different disciplines that Survivor could overlap and intersect with. And that was what really was reaffirming, that Survivor is a game show that I love, and it's a show that can be used as a way to talk about so many different contemporary issues, so many different ideas, philosophies, and can be used as a way to incite dialogue. And hopefully the goal of the course was that now students leave the class not just necessarily critically engaging with reality TV or critically engaging with television, but also critically engaging with the world. And the program that I work in, that the course was offered in, was in a health sciences program. And many of the students go on to pursue careers in healthcare. And conversations around race, sex and gender, LGBTQ communities are going to play a role when they're in the world as healthcare professionals. And the hope is that from engaging with this course, they're able to be more mindful of their biases or be more aware of how conversations are framed when they're placed in a healthcare context or a real world context.
Yeah. So what would you say the lessons are that you yourself have learned from this experience? We highlight how Survivor can be a useful text in your language to as this jumping off point for exploring wider issues. And I think that's why you see several now classes focusing on Survivor versus, most other reality TV shows, where maybe they get used once or twice as an example, but there's not too much to really sink your teeth into. Now, having taught a class about Survivor, what were your lessons, I guess, as an educator and then anywhere else as well from doing that?
One of the biggest lessons that I didn't engage with in the course this time around that I plan to in the future is even thinking about the language of the show. And it was one of my blind spots going into the class because of my fandom. And even thinking around the way the show is framed around tribes, around the Ancient Voices musical score that gets played, around the way the show engages with reward challenges or immunity challenges that are looped and linked into the culture of the space that they were in, pre-Fiji. That was something that I hadn't critically thought about before. And it wasn't until the very last class that a student said to me, because I was asking for feedback. It's like, what was really great? What would you want to change? And one of the students said, I'm surprised that the class didn't engage with that conversation. And I sat there and said, yeah, you're right. That was a blind spot. And so that was something that I learned about myself from engaging with the course. And now looking at the show through that lens, it makes me think and gets me excited about how I want to introduce that and engage that conversation, hopefully, if the course is offered again next year.
I mean, you just blew my eyelids wide open and even presenting that point, which I think is completely legitimate. That was a total blind spot for me as well. But Max Dawson is someone, as Dom mentioned, that we talked to in, I'm going to say, 2013 or so. Yeah, it was. I think it was Kara Moen right around then that we first had Max on the podcast. He then, a couple of years later, went on to be a contestant on the show himself. As of recently, Survivor is now open to Canadian applicants. Is that a route you have considered going? Is applying for the show, is that something you'd be into?
Absolutely. The moment Canadians were allowed to audition, I made a tape and uploaded it. It was one of those things where prior to Canadians being allowed to play the game, people would ask me, so would you play? And my response was, I would love to, but I can't. And it was a nice excuse. And then it got open to Canadians and I went, uh-oh, now I've lost that excuse. And ultimately, I don't think I could not apply. And I don't think, reflecting on myself and my abilities, I don't think I would be a very strong contestant because I am very, I do consider myself to be someone who is empathic. And I don't think I would have the capability to turn on my allies in the way the game might require me to. So I don't think I'd be a very good player. Though when the opportunity came, I felt as though I needed to apply just so I know that I've given it my chance and I've given it my all.
Well, based on the people you've been able to get to come in to talk to your college class, it sounds like if you were to get on the show and go the full Max Dawson route and start your own Survivor podcast, you would be leapfrogging us in no time. So very much looking forward to how all of that ends up playing out. Was there anything else that we haven't brought up specifically to this point that you thought was worth getting into? Any other aspects of the class that seem pertinent here, or anything else, frankly, that you want to get to?
The only piece that was just a really fun assignment that is worth sharing is one of the assignments that I asked the students to engage with was to create their own Survivor challenge. And that was a really fun assignment to evaluate and read, because they were able to watch the show and see how challenges are constructed, both looking at how they were constructed way back when in season one and how they are constructed in more contemporary seasons, and then using an opportunity to creatively engage and design their own Survivor challenge. And the way I framed it was that there was budget was no object. So they were able to, it had to be realistic. They couldn't, you know, have people teleporting or flying, but aside from that, they had an unlimited budget. And so it was really neat to see what the students came up with. And there are some good ideas, and I encourage them to send them to CBS.
I certainly do as well, as long as they're not about just balance and endurance or carnival games.
Yeah. Anyone who involves a bag of puzzle pieces automatically gets an F.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because I had a couple of students approach me and ask, because you know, early on in the semester we had primarily watched a majority of seasons 30 plus. We had, for the first week, we watched episode one of season 37 and obviously episode one of Borneo. And a lot of the episodes that we watched in the first few weeks were focused on 30 plus. And when students were preparing for that assignment, I had a couple of students ask me, does it have to involve a puzzle? And I had to laugh and say, yes, not all challenges end with puzzles. As we engage with the show more and engage with other episodes, you'll see that they're not all puzzle based. But that was something that came up, because that's certainly where the show is right now.
That's so funny. Yeah. Well, where can people be going to find out more, or if they want to follow you, wherever you want to be found? What would you like to plug at this point?
Thank you so much. If anyone wants to find me, my Twitter is at Hartley Jaffeen. And there was an article that my university posted about the course. So if you want to learn more about it, if you Google McMaster Daily News and Hartley Jaffeen, you'll find that article. And if anyone has any questions about the course, please feel free to reach out. I'm happy to chat with anyone who wants to chat Survivor or chat about the course. So I welcome anyone who wants to drop a line and say hello.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for taking so much time with us here today. This was an excellent time.
To you, Dom and Colin, thank you so much for having me. This was really fun.
Yeah. Dom, anything else from you?
No, I just echo what Colin said. Thank you so much for coming on. I know people will be really intrigued to get a window into this world that you set up. So hopefully this is, the beginning of a long line of Survivor being used as this text in an academic setting.
Here's hoping.
Yeah. All right. Well, for anyone previously unfamiliar, Dom is on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. And you can email the show, domandcolin@gmail.com. Regular episodes coming out here on the main feed on Wednesdays, and bonus episodes Saturdays over on the Patreon feed at patreon.com/DomandColin. But that is going to do it for us here today. We will talk to you guys soon. Take care, everybody.